Israel Struggles to Gain Control of Narrative. By Phil Giraldi. In a 2002 interview, the former Israeli government minister Shulamit Aloni was asked by Amy Goodman, the liberal Jewish journalist and host of Democracy Now!, "Often when there is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government, people here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?" Aloni replied, "Well, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe somebody is criticizing Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country, the US, people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic." She added that there is an Israel, is my country right or wrong attitude, and they're not ready to hear criticism. Anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, and the suffering of the Jewish people are exploited to justify everything we do to the Palestinians. Currently, Israel is involved in a conflict with Hamas in Gaza that it has described as a war, though the disparity in force levels involving a country with a modern fully equipped army, navy, and air force versus something more like a militia armed with small arms and homemade rockets suggest that a different label might be more appropriate. The fighting has been constant apart from a six-day pause to exchange hostages and prisoners and promises to continue into the new year, and possibly much longer, due to the difficulty in engaging in anything like conventional warfare in a bombed-out and devastated urban environment that favors the defense. However, it turns out, the conflict in Gaza will be Israel's longest war by far since the creation of the country in 1948. Israel's intention is to force the Gazans to leave, whether by forced resettlement in neighboring countries or in Europe or in the United States. Or by killing them all. The deputy mayor of Jerusalem has recently labeled the Palestinians subhumans and has recommended rounding them up and burying them alive. He is not alone in that viewpoint, and, at a minimum, many government ministers believe that the best outcome of the Palestinian problem is to get rid of the Palestinians in Gaza and also on the West Bank completely, whatever that takes. Israeli extreme brutality in what is now being frequently referred to as a genocide has meant that the Jewish state's list of friends around the world has shrunk dramatically and is limited to several European states and the US under self-declared Zionist President Joe Biden. A recent call for a ceasefire, ignored by Israel, obtained 153 yes votes in the UN General Assembly against 10 no's, two of which were Israel and the United States. And even in those countries nominally supporting Israel's attacks in Gaza, there have been large demonstrations supporting the Palestinians. As the death toll among civilians approaches and may have already exceeded 20,000, governments are beginning to hedge their bets and wobble in their assertions that Israel has a right to defend itself. Defense does not apparently include bombing hospitals, schools, churches, and apartment buildings full of fearful civilians seeking shelter from the explosions. Even Biden is calling for restraint in the indiscriminate bombing, though he is also expediting providing the Israelis with more bombs. More important to Americans should be the fact that defending Israel has meant that there is underway a wholesale assault on the First and Fourth Amendments of the Bill of Rights relating to freedom of speech and association, being conducted by the Israeli lobby and its assets in both of the major political parties, the mainstream news media, Zionist-dominated American social media, and the American national security complex. This has distorted what has happened in Gaza and why, by turning the narrative of the conflict into a totally false saga pitting alleged Arab terrorism and irredentism asterisk directed against the poor Jewish Israelis, who are once again serving as the featured victims. In America, universities are being described as hotbeds of surging anti-Semitism because students are protesting against Israel's ethnic cleansing and killing in Gaza, while the heavily Jewish-influenced media and Jewish billionaires are working overtime to do whatever it takes to block any and all such criticism. The interference of Israel in both American domestic and foreign politics will only get worse in the upcoming year due to national elections. A number of Jewish groups are currently raising money and organizing to go after critics of Israel, most particularly the few progressives in the Democratic Party who have spoken up about the genocide of the Palestinians that is taking place. Since the Israel lobby already controls the White House, its aim is to make the Congress a 100% loyal cheerleader and protector of Israel and all its works, to include the continuing flow of billions of taxpayer dollars annually. Leading American Jewish organizations have just launched the 10-7 Project, which will feature centralized communications to promote bipartisan support of Israel. The 10-7 Project will be sponsored and managed by the American Jewish Committee, the Jewish Federations of North America, the Anti-Defamation League, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Ted Deutsch, CEO of the American Jewish Committee, explained the 10-7 Project's purpose. Since October 7, there has been a concerted and consistent effort from Israel's enemies to draw a false and dangerous equivalence between Hamas' deadly rampage to destroy the Jewish state and Israel's right to defend itself against terrorists. The 10-7 Project will be a trusted and timely source of accurate information to set the record straight and combat false narratives perpetuated by Hamas terrorists and their anti-Israel allies. At this critical juncture, it is imperative that we separate fact from fiction regarding America's most important Middle East ally and remind people that the vast majority of Americans understand that Hamas is our common enemy. What Deutsch is really saying is that there will be a well-funded and staffed effort to stifle criticism of Israel's slaughter of the Palestinians using a narrative that portrays the Israelis as victims of Arab terror, an assertion which might well be described as Zionist propaganda and fact-twisting. The attacks on free speech at universities will definitely be on the agenda, in a campaign that started several months ago when students at a number of public and private universities began protesting over Israel's deliberate targeting of civilians, leading to a death toll that is almost certainly currently approaching or exceeding 20,000 when all the corpses are dug up from the rubble of bombed buildings. Some politically ambitious rogues like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis immediately declared that pro-Palestinian student groups were anti-Semites and banned them from Florida state universities, while also declaring that no Palestinian refugees should be admitted to the U.S. because they too were Jew haters. As the anti-Palestinian narrative took shape in political, media, and Zionist circles, it adopted a familiar line, which goes something like this, though with slight adjustments to reach target audiences: Israel is the Jewish state. If you criticize the Jewish state and/or Zionism, you are therefore by the definition accepted by the U.S. State Department's special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism and anti-Semite. Anti-Semitism is a hate crime, since it is by the same reasoning based on hatred of Jews. If you advocate or argue for any Palestinian group like Hamas, which the U.S. government has conveniently labeled a terrorist organization even though it has never threatened Americans, you are providing material assistance to terrorism, which is a crime for which you can be fined or imprisoned. Even if you merely criticize Jewish groups supporting Israel, you are likewise an anti-Semite because you are attacking Jews and have ipso facto committed a hate crime. Neat, isn't it? And the end result is that Israel, which is immune from the consequences of its actions internationally, also increasingly cannot be criticized at all without serious consequences for the critic, which have included posting the names of protesting students on lists of alleged anti-Semites so they will be unable to find work after they graduate. In other words, freedom of speech in the US and also in some European countries only exists, insofar as it does, if you are not disparaging Israel or even its friends due to their easily demonstrable war criminal behavior. Some of those consequences were experienced recently by three presidents of prominent American universities, responding to a congressional grilling that was set up to address concerns over allegations that colleges are hotbeds of anti-Semitism and are responsible for major increases in incidents targeting Jews. The presidents of the University of Pennsylvania, Liz McGill, Harvard, Claudine Gay, and MIT, Sally Kornbluth, were interrogated by Congress but were afterwards trashed because they couldn't find the words demanded: "We are not okay with direct calls for genocide against Jews." The responses of the three women were found to be unacceptable by Congress and the media. McGill has since resigned, joined by the chairman of the University Board of Trustees Scott Bach, who was immediately replaced by Julie Byrne Platt, head of the Jewish Federations of North America, who has been named interim board chair. But politicians joined by prominent commentators and philanthropists still continue to call for the others to resign as well, though Harvard's Gay has received a vote of confidence from her board and also from faculty and students. Many major Jewish donors have coupled those calls with threats that their multi-million dollar gifts would be withdrawn if the president stay on. In one example, Penn lost a $100 million donation from Ross Stevens, who pulled it after the hearing. Those seeking to punish appear to be undeterred by the fact that their actions have already sparked discussions about unacceptable levels of Jewish power, often including the observation of how promise of money or denying it is used as an instrument to obtain what Israel and its powerful lobby want. There is a certain irony in the allegations, since Jews in America are the wealthiest, best educated, most politically powerful, most prestigiously employed, and most protected by the federal government of all ethno-religious demographics. And there is not much real evidence that Jews are in any way increasingly victims in the US or in Europe. The anti-Semitic incidents that are surging are frequently based on criticisms of what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians, and often consist of a Jewish college student being offended or annoyed by a poster or a speaker criticizing Israeli behavior. Instances of actual physical confrontation are few and far between and are immediately reported in the accommodating mainstream media to heighten the sense that Jews in America and even worldwide are threatened. Certain groups like the American Israel Political Action Committee, AIPAC, and the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, are heavily into the promotion of the narrative of Jew hatred, as it is in their bottom line to do so given their donor base, which likes to hear exactly that. In other words, what one reads and hears about surging anti-Semitism is largely a contrivance to obtain political and economic benefits, as well as a free pass on bad behavior both by Israel and its lobby that might not otherwise be forthcoming. And it should be noted in passing that the pro-Israel groups have somehow avoided registering with the Department of Justice, as required by the Foreign Agents Registration Act, FARA, of 1938, which would require them to maintain transparency over their funding and political activity. The last American president who tried to register what became the Israel lobby and also sought to stop Israel's illegal secret nuclear weapons program was John F. Kennedy. Some suspect that Israeli interests might have played a part in his assassination as a result. The three university presidents were well regarded in their respective communities before they encountered a vengeful Congress. They did not anticipate New York Republican Representative Elise Stefanik, a Harvard product, who was out to nail them and make the case that academia hates Jews and is encouraging anti-Semitism. Stefanik was backed up by politicians from both parties who wanted to curry favor with the Jewish community, which donates heavily to political campaigns and is influential in the media. Stefanik and company were particularly incensed by student pro-Palestinian demonstrators chanting "Intifada" and "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." She interpreted both expressions being calls for the destruction of Israel, which they are not. Intifada is "shaking off" in Arabic and is a call for liberating the Palestinian people and their land from Israeli tyranny and occupation. The "river to sea" is somewhat similar, a call for a Palestinian state with actual sovereignty, and neither is an explicit call for killing Israelis or Jews. They might be considered generic cries for freedom. Curiously, though not surprisingly, Stefanik did not mention the concurrent actual demands by senior Israeli government officials to displace or kill all Palestinians, something that they actually have the power to do and which might be regarded as a threat. The university presidents were pilloried by Congress, the White House, the Israel lobby, and the media by refusing to label all criticisms of the Zionist project and Israeli behavior as unacceptable free speech, and through their assertion that the meaning of political slogans often depends on the context. For something or someone to qualify as a source of harassment, which is forbidden at the colleges in question, there has to be a direct threat made to another person. When that is present, it is harassment. When it is not, it is protected speech on a university campus, even if it is critical of group behavior or even racist. That is as it should be. But the real mystery in all this is, why is it happening at all? Jews are supposed to be smart, but is it smart to reveal how much power you have, particularly when you are prepared to wield it ruthlessly to suppress people who just might begin to wonder if there is something going on that is being deliberately contrived to benefit a tiny percentage of the US population in a foreign government? And if that kind of thinking catches on, which I believe it already has, there might be serious discussions of ways to counter the efforts to limit free speech and association for citizens who are not comfortable with the way Israel behaves and the way the Israel lobby silences critics. Instead of trying to criminalize what people are thinking, wouldn't it be smarter and even more ethical for American Jews to call on Israel to stop the killing and work out some formula that allows the Palestinians at least a modicum of self-government and freedom? That would seem to make sense, and many Jews in the U.S. are actually making that argument. The problem is to also convince the hardcore and well-financed Jewish groups that support Israel no matter who it has to kill that learning to live together with equal rights is the way to go. And then we must convince the know-nothings in the Biden administration and idiots in Congress like Senator Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio, no easy task indeed. Irredentism is the policy of advocating the restoration to a country of any territory formerly belonging to it. Philip Giraldi is a former CIA counterterrorism specialist and military intelligence officer and a columnist and television commentator. He is also the executive director of the Council for the National Interest. Other articles by Giraldi can be found on the website of the UNS Review.